At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat. And boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Coming up on Nothing Major, myself and the guys are going to recap the ATP 250s that happened last week in Europe. The WTA race is nearing its conclusion. We're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk a little bit about the Six King Slam, or as Sam likes to say, the Five King Slam. And Tsitsipas. That's all ahead on the show. Thanks for listening in. Welcome back, everyone, to Nothing Major. John Isner here with Sam Querrey, Jack Sock, Cal Ripken, a.k.a. Stevie J. Not here today. He's working at Tennis Channel. He offered to log in on his phone for 15 minutes. That's all the time he has. We said no. Don't bang things up. But Stevie, we miss you. We know you're at the Tennis Channel studios right now. But anyways, Charlie Fox and the team at SIFT, as always, is with us today. Big 250 week, which always happens, seems to always happen after Shanghai concludes and it tour moves over to Europe in the indoor season. There were three events. There was Almaty, I think I'm pronouncing that right, Brussels, and Stockholm. The former two are brand new events. Am I right about that?
Brussels Almaty used to be in another city in...
Yeah, of course. It used to be like Antwerp or something.
Yeah, so it's not new.
It's a different, completely different city.
But not a new tournament, I guess you'd say.
Well, the no tournament's a new tournament. If a tournament moves.
I'm with you. Someone called me out for this the other day. Like, I was at Tennis Channel. Like, wow, this player won the tournament in 2015. I'm like, well, it's a new tournament. They're like, no, it's just moved locations.
Well, I'm saying like New York, the New York Open moved to Dallas. So it's first year in Dallas. It's just... It's first year in Dallas, right? It's a new event, is
yeah.
it not?
No, I'm with you. But what if the Dallas tournament – or sorry, what if the New York tournament moved to like another city in New York 20 miles away?
That's fair.
Okay. Yeah, what if Dallas became the Fort Worth Open?
Is that the case in Almaty? Because someone wrote in on the comments on YouTube that
– we're wrong about our Kazakhstani cities.
Okay, we were wrong about our Kazakhstani cities. Anyways, let's talk about Almaty because I think that's the most notable of the events. And then we're going to get into Stockholm because something really big happened there, as we all know, very unfortunate as well. But Almaty is where Medvedev takes the title. And he went a ridiculous, for his standards, 882 days without a title. That, of course, ended yesterday in Kazakhstan. Medvedev, is he kind of back? And also, can we get a graphic at where the race standings are right now? Because he had a decent run in Asia, takes a 250. Jack, is Daniil kind of back? 882 days, that's nuts. But takes the 250, takes out Moutet, 6-3 in the third.
I'm going to say for his standards and where he's been, like his level's been and ranking has been, titles he's won, I don't think he's back by winning this 250. I think it's a nice step in the right direction, but I think in winning a tournament is winning a tournament, don't get me wrong, but like in the fashion that he did, I mean, for him maybe losing a set to Duckworth, battling, you know, those types of matches, I feel like a couple of his matches were grinds, and then you have like a cat, like other guys, Casper, and these people that are just rolling through the tournaments kind of it just seems it might slightly better level. I think it's an awesome, like I said, awesome step in the right direction for Daniil, but I wouldn't say like, I'm not going to have him contending to win, you know, Master Series and playing deep into slams, maybe like he was before, just by winning the Almaty 250. But I think it's awesome for him. Hopefully gives him, again, that confidence and a boost in that right direction to get back to where we know he can play and where he's been. But yeah, I wouldn't classify him as back.
All right. Well, Sam, all right. I think I do agree with you there, but Sam, short-term thinking for Daniil the rest of the year after taking this title, he's about roughly 600 or so points behind Felix for the number 9 spot. We don't know if Djokovic is going to play Turin. Do you give Daniil a decent shot to make it into Turin this year with Vienna? He's playing Vienna. Yep. And Paris up ahead for him. And then I also have, for both you guys, I have a question to stay on the Medvedev subject after you answer this, Sam.
Yeah, I give him a good shot. He's off a semifinal in Beijing, then a semifinal in Shanghai, and now a win in Almaty. And it was like a must-have win. He's trying to get that last spot, and kudos to him because he needed to win the tournament, and he won it. I mean, all the guys that needed to win the 250s this week won them, but like Medvedev semi win. I mean, I agree with Jack. He's not like back, but I don't know if he's ever going to get back into the top like 3. But to win the tournament this week or last week in a pressure filled situation where he needed to win it and keep pace with the other guys, like huge props to Daniil Medvedev, regardless of who he beat. He's got a lot of momentum right now. And I don't know if he's 600 points is a lot of points. I don't know if he can jump in and take that 9 spot. But if Novak doesn't play, I think Medvedev is getting that 8th and final spot based on how he's playing right now.
So that would be the 9th spot, and he's 600 points behind.
I guess what you're saying, okay. Yeah. Well, it's the 10th because Draper's not playing too, you know what I mean?
Oh, Draper. You're right. I apologize. Draper's out.
Yeah. So I meant it like
that. Draper's out. You're right.
No, yeah, you're right. If Novak doesn't play, I think Medvedev is going to out-duel Casper and the other Musetti and get that last and final spot.
Okay. My question on Daniil is he turns 30 in February. Do you guys worry about his longevity given the fact that how he plays so far back on the back of the court? Clearly he's a big, tall guy, skinny. Yes. He's wiry. He's running around side to side every single match he plays. Do you guys worry about his longevity? Cause there's a lot of miles on his body right now at 29 years old, just because of how he plays. Jack, what do you think about that?
I'm not sure I would maybe stress about the injury side of it, but more the play style, just because these younger guys are just so much more aggressive, so much like they have maybe a few more things in the arsenal with coming forward, using the net play. They're already younger, faster, maybe more athletic at times. So I mean, his body might be able, probably hold up. I'm sure he does the best of the best to stay healthy and stay fit always. But
yeah,
I mean, at some point, even Novak, I feel like obviously he's much older, but still trying to play more aggressive, trying to keep up with the play style and the fast paced tennis these days. Daniil, I don't know if you're going to be able to stay 8 feet behind the baseline and grind out Alcaraz and Sinner and all these Fritzy and all these guys. You're not going to be able to do that, especially when you turn 30, get into your mid 30s. So I would think maybe more of a play style change than probably worry for injuries would be my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't worry about injury. He's not a violent mover like an Alcaraz or Rafa. I don't think, not that he's like the most graceful mover, but he's just like a mover. And, but same with Jack. Like I don't think he has like the arsenal or the weapons to get back in top 5, but I think he's totally fine physically for another 5 years. You agree with this, or do you?
I worry about it. That's why I posed the question. I mean, clearly, I hope I'm wrong. I hope he's playing fantastic tennis at 34 years old, top 10 level tennis. That would be amazing. Jack, to your point, he's a master of his craft at what he does on the court. He doesn't really, in my mind, have the arsenal to be able to change that, to be able to you know, implement a crush and rush on a second serve return and put away a volley, right? He doesn't have the best volleys in the world, doesn't like coming to the net. So he's so good at what he does, returning serve from 15 feet behind the baseline and playing 15 feet behind the baseline. He just seems like he's just got a lot of miles on his body. He's a skinny guy. He potentially could be susceptible. It could,
with injury.
But he's susceptible to a breakdown. I hope I'm totally wrong. Love Daniil, incredible player, but the ability for him to change his game style, I don't think is there. So
that's a question for you guys. Changing the game style, I think once you're like 25, Like, your game style is your game style. Your mentality, your mental thought process is that's what you got at this point. We always have this conversation with, like, Zverev. Oh, so, you know, sometimes he gets a little tight on the big moments. Why does he go for it? I don't think – it's not changeable at this point. Just like with Medvedev, I don't think you can tell him, like, hey, get up on the baseline and play an aggressive style of tennis. I know these guys are elite athletes and pros, but in my opinion, like, that's what you got at this point.
Yeah.
It's not like, John, late in your career, you can work on a backhand chip return and, like, master it.
I think if you're not a bot, like, if you're, like, a one-trick pony, then, yeah, you can maybe, like, work on some things, like, on the aggressive style of play. But for these guys, they kind of are what they are. Zverev and Medvedev in particular aren't as good as at the net as they are, of course, from the back of the court, just like most players are. So they can't just use that. It's, like, just – in 6 months' time become a world-class volleyer to be able to finish points off quicker. So I'm with you there, Sam. I think it, for the most part, you're right.
We've never seen a player late 20s drastically change their game style and, like, be successful at it, have we?
I don't know off the top of my head. I don't know.
Little adjustments for sure, but I'm just saying, like, oh, wow, this guy's game style, like, is completely different now.
Yeah, I feel like unless you're a one-off, like the center out, like guys that have it all, that can do anything on the court. In tennis, you maximize what you, like you said, you master your craft, and then you maximize that for whatever period of time you can on this tour, and you hopefully make as much money as you can, get as many titles as you can, do all that, and then you're not going to just change it up and all of a sudden be a different player now winning titles, doing something else. Just try to make the most of what you got for that time that you can be out there and feeling healthy and feeling good.
Yeah, well said.
That's exactly what, that's the name of the game right there, Jack.
All right, everyone, the holidays are sneaking up fast. We know they're right around the corner, but it's not too early to get your shopping done and actually have fun while shopping. I usually don't like shopping. I actually have fun shopping with Uncommon Goods. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, literally everyone. Unique gifts you won't find anywhere else. I'm not joking, guys. There's everything on this website. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. How cool is that? So much better to go here than it is those big box retailers. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back a dollar to a nonprofit partner of your choice. You get to pick the partner of your choice, a nonprofit, they'll give them a dollar. So that's awesome. I actually just bought some nice smelling bath or shower soaps on there. They've got stuff on Uncommon Goods you don't know you need. I didn't know I need these, but I need them. And they're unbelievable. These, like, beautiful, like, soaps you put in the shower. It makes the shower smell unbelievable. So go check out Uncommon Goods. They have stuff for everyone, and I mean everyone. So shop early, have fun, and cross names off your holiday list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/nothingmajor. That's uncommongoods.com/nothingmajor for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited one-time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
Okay, enough about Almaty. Congrats to Daniil. Wishing the best in Vienna and Paris, but we're going to move on to Stockholm. Casper Ruud takes out Hugo Humbert really easily, 2 and 3. And as Sam mentioned before, the guys that needed to win these 250s, we'll talk about Brussels in a little bit, did win the 250s to kind of keep themselves in contention to make the final eight. In Turin, Casper, his 14th title, playing in Scandinavia, obviously feels at home, I would imagine, somewhat at home in Stockholm. He kind of told us that as well when we interviewed him a long time ago. But that's not the story of the tournament. The story of the tournament is Holger Rune tearing his Achilles tendon. And that is such a brutal blow for Holger. We all feel for him. Sam, I want to lead with you because you have dealt with this injury before. I'm sure it's a total pain in the ass. First of all, what in your mind, what is going through Holger's mind right now and what does he have ahead of him rehab wise, because you did tear your Achilles tendon about 18 months ago or so.
Yeah. I mean, I was, you know, I'm retired and, like, not working on my body. It's shocking to see some of these athletes now tear their Achilles. Holger's like, what, 25 years old, but I feel for him. Everyone does. He's got a brutal year ahead. I mean, it is a full year, and tennis, especially him, like, you're so, John and I were talking about this with Agassi yesterday. Tennis, like, to get back, like, it's such a lower body sport. He's got to be so physical and so aggressive with his legs and the push-offs and the change of direction. It's not like he can come back when that Achilles is 80%. It's got to be 100% for him to be confident and move around. And that probably takes a year. You know, some other sports you can maybe in football, if you're a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, come back a little early because you can make up for it with just, you know, throwing a ball with an arm. Obviously, he's got to use his legs too. But tennis is such a lower body sport that it was just heartbreaking for Holger. He's going to be out for a year. He said he tore it.
I know.
Also, too, he was fine for that last spot in turn as well. He was right there in the mix with Medvedev and Felix and Casper. So he was tearing up on the sideline, and I felt for him just like everyone else did.
It's one of those things when you watch the highlight, and Sam, when I watched you go down, not to bring up the bad memories, like you when that injury happens, you look behind you as if like something happened or someone like shot you in the back of the leg. And that's what he did. That's what you did when you went down, Sam.
The biggest tendon in the body just takes a really long time to heal.
Oh, it's brutal. Like, I don't, Jack, do you see him coming back at all in 2026? I don't, because what I mean, like, maybe he could come back for the fall schedule. Why would you do that? Why would you play three tournaments into the year? You might as well just take your maximum amount of time to get ready for, I can't believe I'm saying this, Aussie Open 2027. It's just brutal.
I mean, I feel like that's probably what you have to do. Because I mean, obviously, with the lower body injury, you're not able to, I mean, Sam knows obviously more better than any of us, but you're not gonna be able to do anything physically. You're not, even if it takes a year, you know, to get back on court and do all that, then it's getting back in shape, getting back fit, and being ready to play these guys that are still going to be playing consistently and every week. And you're not just going to hop right back into that. So yeah, I would assume just take 2026 to heal up and then get fully ready to battle and compete. I was gonna ask Sam, is the Achilles one of those? Like, I know, like, I've had like hip-ish surgeries, and sometimes like you go and you actually feels like stronger after. You're not really like worried about it, but I feel like the Achilles is one that's just going to be in the back of your mind every time that you're moving and doing anything. Like my hip, I don't think about. They reinforce it. It honestly feels like I don't have to think about it ever. But like Achilles, I feel like I'm scared to like go down the stairs or like walk or like do like. I feel like you'd
I'm
be.
With you,
you'd,
man.
Yeah,
I think about it a little bit, but I did rehab on mine, but I probably did 70% of what Holger will do. You know, I was retired. I wasn't like super, super diligent with the rehab and like getting back as fast as I could. Cause what am I going to get back to record a podcast with you guys? It's not like I was getting back out there. So I hope he gets to that spot. But like you said, Jack, that even though he's back in a year, it might take him 2 years before mentally he's like, okay, I have zero hesitation to push off in any direction. But yeah, terrible. But shout out to Casper for winning the tournament.
Right? Shout out to Casper.
It's true.
I wonder if Holger has insurance on himself.
I'm going to guess no.
Did you guys ever do that?
I did for like a year or two, and then I got rid of it. Did you?
Yeah, disability insurance.
In retrospect, I feel like I should have. I'm glad I didn't, because I never had like a super long-term injury. But some athletes do have a big long-term injury protection where they can get compensated if they can't make any money. Which Holger, of course, is not going to be on the court for a full year. So that's just brutal. 22 years old. But he will be back. He's so young. He's an unbelievably hard worker. But a tough blow for him. We here at Nothing Major really feel for Holger. It was just tough scenes to watch him go down in Stockholm. Brussels, Felix takes out.
Wait, should we talk about Casper winning the tournament or no?
I mean,
all right.
We kind of did.
He kept up with the pace of the.
Yeah, and
of
I did mention that. Yeah, I did mention that. And so did Felix. Felix takes out my boy Lehechka. That's who he takes out. 6-2 in the third, 7-6, 6-7, 6-2. The guy's good, really good. Third title of the season for Felix. That's just really quick. We've spoken about Felix, I feel like, a lot on this pod. Like, is he having a good year? Is he not having a good year? We go back and forth. The answer is yes, he's having a good year. He's top 10. But he has all these like early losses. One of the streakiest guys on tour. He's on a hot streak right now, playing well, played pretty well in Asia. Now he likes indoors. We know that. Very good indoors. So Felix wins, and he gets a critical 250 points to stay ahead of everyone behind him right now. So he's in pole position for that ninth spot, assuming Novak decides not to play turn.
Yeah. I actually called his first round match in Brussels. He played DeZoomer. And he won in three. And he said it like streaky. He won that match, but had, I'm kind of going based off memory, he had like 63 airs and 61 winners. It was it wasn't like a great match to watch, honestly. It was just hit or miss. But John said it, he's having a good year now. Like, I know he had those first round losses, but three titles, one final, semifinal of the US Open, top 10. That's great. That's a phenomenal year. Like, anyone would basically sign up for that year. Yeah. And look, he's like on the, just got married. Now he's winning the tournament. He's in pole position, like you said, to get that last spot. And if Novak doesn't play, he's for sure going to get that spot, I feel like. But he's dangerous. And his serve is, he's got a massive serve, as we know. I hate to say it's underrated because we know he's got a huge serve, but it's definitely not talked about with like that handful of like top few guys. But I think it's in there.
It's not talked about because sometimes he will double fault in critical moments, and so therefore you think his serve can break down. But his first serve points won are like crazy good.
Yeah.
Sam, we look forward to you on Tennis Channel giving your best Steve Kornacki. You did that last week of the race rankings with your folded up newspaper that you have in your hand.
Yep.
So that's ahead, right? In the next
that'll be
days?
Coming again this Sunday.
Okay, beautiful. Can't wait. Yeah,
look forward to that.
Are you still sleeping on that mattress like years ago that you went to pick out and you got a little cheap on and you don't really love it? Well, that relationship with your mattress is probably over and you need a new one. But that's where Ghostbed comes into play, and Ghostbed makes it really, really easy. Take their online mattress quiz to answer a few questions and curate the perfect mattress for yourself. No awkward store visits, no salespeople hovering over you, getting raked over the coals, buying some crazy expensive mattress that's really not that comfortable to begin with. Ghostbed has been in the game for 10 years, and they've been built on decades of mattress making know-how. The most important feature of these Ghostbed mattresses for me is the cooling tech that they have, so you don't wake up sweaty in the middle of night. It's what I absolutely love. They're backed by a 20-year warranty, and you get a 101-night sleep trial to make sure it's the right mattress for you. That's a lot of nights to make sure you're comfortable with it. The one I've been rocking with is the Venus Williams Ledging mattress. It's a huge upgrade over what I had before. More support, no lower back pain. Again, most importantly, has that cooling technology. It's awesome. Our offer at Nothing Major, and this is their 10-year anniversary sale, is 25% off site-wide, but only for a limited time. So go to ghostbed.com/nothingmajor and use our code NOTHINGMAJOR to check out. Ghostbed, coolest beds in the world. Some exclusions do apply. So go to the website for all the details. Some of the news that was on the internet this week, and it started with, on X in particular, started with Jack Draper, clearly referring to Holger's injury, saying, quote, that the tour and the calendar have to adapt if any of us are going to achieve some sort of longevity. And Taylor Fritz added on quite a bit to this with some very sound replies, of course, to Draper and to some fans as well. Taylor's initial response was, facts, also seeing more injuries and burnout now than ever before because of the conditions he's talking about. Balls, courts and conditions have slowed down a lot, making the weekly grind even more physically demanding and tough on the body. Fritz, also mentioned because of the new ATP rule that he's had to play, required to play every 500 post-Wimbledon to meet the new quota they have for 500s played in a year, not to get a ranking penalty. Anyways, for you guys, question for both of y'all. Jack, start with you here. Is the tour too long? Do they need to adapt? What do you think?
It's such a tough question. I feel like tennis is a grind. I think it is the most underestimated sport in the world. We know it from playing. I don't think people realize the ins and outs of the travel, the grind, the hours on court and in the gym. We play an entire year, and everyone wants to talk about off seasons, and you see, you know, some other major sports, they get to have a month vacation, 2 months vacation, whatever they want for off season stuff. We get a week or 10 days, maybe, at some point in the fall. So
it's where you go to the Maldives.
You go to the Maldives, and post pictures with other tour players. I think it's too long. I think it's too long in the sense of just not enough time to reset throughout the year, I think. And if you want to reset, then now you're missing out on tournaments, you're missing out on points, potentially missing your quota for events, which can affect, you know, financially, ranking wise. So yeah, would it be nice throughout the year to have some more pockets of time to reset, be at home, feel fresh going into tournaments, but I also don't see that changing. It's also an entertainment business at the end of the day. They have to put on their events. They have to make their money. The ATP Tour, these events all have to sell tickets. So I don't see it changing, but could it be a little shorter or just restructured a little bit? I think so, for sure. Yeah, I think the injuries and the product you're getting every week may not, you know, you can maybe have a better product, fresher product from players if it was a little different.
I don't think the season needs to be shortened. I think they need to get rid of these mandatory events, like mandatory, not events, but rules that Taylor's talking about. You have to play this tournament, these amount of 500s, or you have to play these. If they just had all the tournaments and said, guys, play whatever you want, I'd be curious to see how many events the guys would play. You know, because you can't just shorten the season and go to every tournament post US Open, Shanghai, Beijing, Vienna, Basel. Hey, by the way, you guys, your tournament doesn't exist anymore. We've decided to shorten the season. That's not the real world. You can't do that. But the tour needs to get rid of, I think, or switch up the, all right, if you guys don't play 400 or 500s, your ranking will be slashed. Or if you don't play for every Masters series that you miss, your bonus at the end of the year is slashed. I understand having some mandatory events, you know, that's fine, if especially the players are going to be compensated so well. But no, but you can't just shorten the tour. It's, you just can't do that. Just give the guys more options.
Yeah, if a guy can go play 16, 18 events and make tournament at the end of the year because he balls out and he's confident he can do that, and another guy wants to go play 38 events and try to pick up as many points as possible, then I don't know, albeit, but you should be able to have the choice.
And you can play 16 to 18 events and make tournament. Federer, Nadal, Djokovic did that. But in the current system, you're going to do that. You're going to miss tournaments. You're going to take a hit with the bonuses and whatnot.
You absolutely are. Yeah, I'm with you guys. Like, you can't, and I don't think the tour is too long. I really don't. There's nothing you can do about it. So it just like you said, Sam. But also the problem is that the tour needs to protect their marquee tournaments, their Masters 1000 events. That's why they make them mandatory. So it's a crazy long schedule. These guys, you know, tennis is, it's the most physically demanding sport there is, Jack. I mean, that I think that's what you were saying. Just the amount of travel and the jet lag that we have had to deal with our whole lives, these players are dealing with right now, is crazy tough. And to play such a physical sport, to try to be on top of your game at all times, physically and mentally, it's brutal. Tennis is just crazy tough, man. And it sucks to see these young guys right now, the young, really attractive players on the men's game, in the men's game with Draper and Holger, go down with serious injuries.
Do players, when they're talking about that, like, we're with the players, like when they say shorten the season, like, I would love to know their ideas to shorten the season. Cause again, you can't just, all right, let's randomly pick 8 tournaments and just remove them.
Yeah.
Like, these people have purchased the rights to the weeks of these tournaments. Basel, Vienna, Shanghai. Yep. These events, these entities are worth hundreds of millions of dollars that they've bought. You can't just go back to them and say, like, so long. You don't own anything.
No, you can't. No, there's nothing you do. Yeah,
there's nothing you can do. Like,
These tournaments aren't going anywhere.
The fans weirdly think you can, though. That sometimes, they, like, not to knock the tennis fans, are like, man, just like get, just have like 8 tournaments.
Yeah. In the season after the US Open.
Yeah.
Call it.
That's right, that was a big one, I feel like.
You call Shanghai, tell them they're no longer a tournament.
Give these guys a proper offseason. The US Open is done.
Yeah. And then call Rolex on top of that and tell them Shanghai's not happening anymore. And then call everything that goes with it. Just,
that's true.
Having said that, like we're saying, sympathize with the players, and they could change the rules to make it more beneficial for everyone, and the players would like it.
Yeah. That's it. Okay, so this week, starting today, there's Vienna and Basel. I don't think we need to dig into the draws too much. Felix and Casper are playing Basel, where Taylor is the number one seed. Taylor plays Vachero first round, boy. Vavrinka is also in the draw. Got a wild card there. There's also Vienna, of course. These tournaments are always concurrent, but between these two tournaments, I think all of us have played both. Jack, have you played Vienna before?
Never played Vienna, only Basel.
Oh, never mind. You were a Basel guy. You were a big Swedish meatballs guy. Or what was that dish they always served?
Oh, yeah.
And we don't know about Sam.
Yeah.
It was a meatball dish in the Basel little...
I think it was like just meatball.
It was just, Swedish meatballs
just
in Switzerland.
Swedish meatballs, Swiss meatballs.
No, it was Swedish, though. It was Swedish, I remember. But
I think anytime anyone has a meatball, they call it Swedish.
That's true.
Yeah, anyways. But Sam, which one did you prefer, real quick, between the two, Vienna and Basel?
Vienna. I mean, Vienna, the city, like, take the tournaments away. The city of Vienna is so much better than the city of Basel as far as, like, walking around, things to do, beauty, all encompassing. The hotel in Vienna was a little better. I thought the venue in Vienna was a little more friendly. I guess it was just, Basel was sterile.
It is. Tournament is. The city's still beautiful.
Give me Vienna all day.
Yeah, Vienna's one of the great European cities.
You ever eat the reindeer in Vienna, in Players Lounge? Remember one deer?
I don't remember that.
Reindeer, a little gory, but
I just remember the coffee cart. The coffee in Vienna is just so elite. They had the cart on the wheels. It was the best. The reindeer.
Yeah, have a little Rudolph before your match.
Yeah.
Didn't help. I always lost early.
I'm with you. Vienna over Basel, not to disparage Roger's, Federer's hometown, but we like Vienna here. Jack, you never played it, so we're saying Vienna's the better tournament. All right, let's go into the WTA. We mentioned that in the pre-intro. Ningbo just concluded. There was a 500 event in Ningbo after Wuhan, which we spoke about Coco taking out Pagula in Wuhan. Man, it seems like the WTA has been over there for 10 weeks already.
You could literally play in Asia for like 10 straight weeks on the WTA tour.
Yeah, they have tournaments there like after the Aussie Open, I feel like, too. It's okay. But Rybakina, is that how you say it?
Yeah. It used to be Rybakina, now it's Rybakina.
Okay, now it's Rybakina. Takes out Alexandrova in the final, 6-2 in the third. And Rybakina now just sits 15 points behind Mira Andreeva in the race. Andreeva is not playing the 500 in Tokyo, but Rybakina is.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's a two-woman race for the last spot. Rybakina's 15 points behind Andreeva.
Thank you. Can you break it down, Sam?
One of the two is going to make it, Rybakina or Andreeva. Rybakina is, I believe, 15 points behind Andreeva in the race. Having said that, like, she doesn't – it's not just like if she wins a round in Tokyo and gets 15 points, she's going to hop her. She's got to make the semifinals, I believe, right?
Yes.
If she makes the semifinals in Tokyo, she guarantees the spot, does Rybakina. Yep. But you'd think Andreeva just would also be playing Tokyo, knowing that, hey, if I just matched Rybakina, like, I guarantee myself a spot.
Yeah, she blocks her out.
So the ball's in Rybakina's court. Rybakina makes a semifinal this week, she's in. If she doesn't, Andreeva's in.
And the reason for our listeners that she can't just win one match, she's 15 points behind. She needs to make a semifinal to bump, because it's all about your best 18 tournaments on your record. So she needs to make a semifinal to get the requisite amount of points to move her 18th best event off of her record. Then that would give her the necessary points to take out Mira. But again, an interesting decision for Andreeva not to play Tokyo. So again, Sam, ball is in Rybakina's court semifinals, and she punches her ticket to Riyadh. Jack.
If you're Andreeva, clearly you didn't sign up for the tournament. If you're in her, I was going to ask you guys, if you're in her position, are you like signing up for qualies last minute if you can, or like try to get in and try to go win matches to match the spots? Or are you just...
Ask for a wild card.
I would think she like would be a guaranteed wild card, but no, she must have just hit a point where it's just like I'm good.
You just don't care at that. I mean,
she's so young. I don't think she's totally stressing about it right now.
No, yeah,
but it is interesting for sure.
Yeah, because I wonder how many matches she'd have to win to keep her out. Like if she has to make semis without her playing, and she wins, like what?
Yeah, I don't know what exactly it would be, but you'd imagine she'd have to just match her.
American women, though, correct? Four of them in the World Tour Finals.
Yes,
American
women. It's awesome.
Like, unreal. Yeah.
Madison, Jesse, Coco, and Amanda. Incredible to see those four will be competing in the year-end finals. That's going to be a big event. But all eyes on Tokyo this week to see if Rybakina can get that eighth and final spot. And if she does, anyone can win that thing. I mean, I like that. That I think is totally wide open on the women's side. It's going to be awesome to watch. We'll keep an eye on that. Last thing, the Six Kings roundup. We spoke about this also before. It concluded with Sinner taking out Alcaraz, of course, 2-4, just an absolute beatdown in the finals. Sinner takes home the $6 million on top of his guarantee, which I'm sure was, I feel like it was more than 1.5.
That's what we don't know. We have so many different things hearing about how much guys got paid. Was it per match, just the fee to show up? Does the winner get $4.5 million? Does the winner get $6 million? Like,
that's what it's saying here, that he gets an additional $4.5 million to make the total $6 million.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Fritzy takes out Djokovic in a 7-6. Djokovic pulled the ripcord after that. What were they playing for in the third and fourth? They clearly were playing for something.
Well, we don't know that. They might not be.
Yeah.
We don't know. Like, here's what my one pet peeve you saw on the internet, like, Zverev and Tsitsipas, they got $1.5 million and they're for 56 minutes. Everyone's annoyed with it. Yeah, why are people ridiculous. Always annoyed with that, but they're not annoyed? John and I were talking about this, like, with a soccer player or a baseball player or an NFL guy that signs a 3-year, $81 million deal and, you know, puts up 6 points, 2 rebounds a game. They're like, yeah, good for those guys. Get paid. Like, no, good for Zverev and Tsitsipas. It's not like they randomly drew chips out of a hat.
I was just going to say that.
Slam. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, these guys have put together a phenomenal body of work over the course of the last 10 years to deserve that spot to play. Doesn't matter that they lost in under an hour. It does not. They're phenomenal players that deserve to be there and deserve that paycheck.
What fans are doing is that they're looking at this Six Kings event, like they're looking at the event like in a vacuum. Can't do that, right? It's they were invited because of their body of the work, not over just the last year or 2 years. It's like their body of work, their whole careers. So good for them. The tour is clearly opening up to Saudi Arabia. Tennis is with the WTA Finals going to be there. Good for them. It was great to see. Did you guys watch any of it on Netflix? Jack, did you see any of it?
I did. I tuned in for a minute, but it's not appealing to me. I've watched a lot more tennis than I thought I ever would, but that I didn't have any desire to like turn that on and like.
It's also tough to turn on Netflix like Wednesday at like 11 a.m. Like,
also true.
Yeah.
We get kids, you know? It's like, you can't do that. I didn't see any of it. Sam, you might have seen some clips of it or whatever. What did you think of the...
I turned it on. I watched a little bit of the Sinner-Alcaraz final. Production was kind of average. Like, there was no, like, there's no desk for the hosts. Like, the camera angles are still a little weird. Like, if it's going to be there with that much on the line on Netflix, I feel like the production value of it needed to be bigger with the entrances and, like, the multiple cameras and just all the extra stuff that goes with it. So I was a little underwhelmed from that point of view, but I definitely felt that the final with Sinner-Alcaraz, like it felt like a big match to me. I know it was an exo, but it felt just as big, maybe not as a slam, but as a Master Series final.
And again, it makes me like, I go back and forth between these two. Like, who's going to win more slams, Alcaraz or Sinner? And at Wimbledon, I'm like, it's Sinner for sure. Like Sinner's got him like the rest of his career. Then you see how well Alcaraz plays the US Open. Then it's Alcaraz. Yes, this isn't a sanctioned event, but they were playing for a lot. Sinner just beat him down 4-2.
I know.
I go back and forth. I'm like Team Sinner now. He's gonna have more slams at the end of his career.
Do we like Alcaraz to finish your top five? No.
I think he has that. I think he has that. We have a picture of the trophy that Sinner got for winning.
Oh, the gold trophy.
Selling that immediately.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Also, back to Almaty. Sorry, there's all this picture of Medvedev like with the trophy, like wearing like the traditional like Kazakhstani garb. I don't know why it was so funny to me. Did you see that?
I think anything Medvedev does is kind of funny. That's probably why.
I'm going to find this and I'm going to send it to our group chat.
I feel like you could see a picture of Medvedev eating a cheeseburger and it would be like funny for whatever reason.
That's so true.
I know. Anyways, I think that's it for today.
Yeah.
All right. I think that was good. That was a meat and potatoes episode right there.
Oh, was it ever? Bunch of big 250s. Down.
250s, WTA 500, the race. So that's it for this Monday. Thank you for tuning in, guys. Jack, Sam, appreciate you guys. We will see you on Friday.
Yes, sir.